would purchase and read my book and follow some of the teachings and the exercises and routines, but also the parents, so that they'd be able to provide mentorship that would extend beyond maybe what, you know, their normal level of comfort would be. And with that said, is, you know, you may have some parents that are very voracious appetites for reading and astute in maybe mathematics or science, but then maybe they can't offer as much guidance to their children as they're learning writing skills. And on the flip side, they might have some of more of those literary skills, but may not be well versed in the financial side with providing really, you know, mentorship or tutelage to the young adults and developing some sense of responsibility.
Nicholas, we're going to have to leave it there. I'd like to have you back another time. Nicholas Aratakis, author of No More Ramen. We'll be back after these messages.
I'm so hungry.
Shoes, George.
If you love me, no more stores.
Your sister's wedding, pink shoes.
One good sandwich.
La Casa Bodega, great sandwiches. We'll watch the ocean. Turn left.
I'm so hungry.
Turn left.
Wait, La Casa Bodega. See, I can find anything.
You're amazing. You order, I'll get wine for dinner. You never miss it.
Wine for dinner?
George, your tie's on fire.
Red or white?
The car just blew up.
Okay, red, just because I love you.
La Casa Bodega on Del Monte, across from Wharf 2, 831-655-3222. Best food and wine in town.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to 1 million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Before past the hour, time for Seat Notes. While most sane people sleep in on Saturday morning, or the less sane grab the to-do list and head out on errands, a bunch of folks will find themselves at the training room at Monterey Bay Aviation on the last Saturday of the month for a lecture on something to do with flying. About 30 of us were gathered one Saturday, and most of us stayed longer than the usual 2 hours because the subject was important and the presenter knew his stuff. A former Marine, he'd learned to fly late in life, gotten into air traffic control, and now is on the lecture circuit for the Federal Aviation Administration teaching safety programs. He loved his work, and that made our learning a pleasure. The focus in this lecture was on safe transit, on the taxiways and the runways principally, with an emphasis on how best to communicate with air traffic control. One of the things that air traffic control does for pilots is to keep them a safe distance from each other in the air, and as airport ground control does on the ground. And the issue arose about how important it is to know and use the correct phraseology and to be precise. For instance, to know the difference between hold position, which means don't move your plane, and take position and hold, which sends you onto the runway but has you delay for takeoff. I know you don't need to know the details. I happen to find this stuff fascinating, and I think occasionally if I dribble out some of it, someone out there will listen and decide to take a discovery flight at their local airport and be exposed to the wonders of flying. One of the issues raised was about communicating to air traffic control about sighting other aircraft. For instance, you may hear that there is another aircraft up there with you, especially in crowded airspace. Perhaps it's crossing beneath you a couple of thousand feet from one heading to another. You are then supposed to look for that aircraft in that direction and then report the plane when you do, or when you see it. If you have a plane in sight and report it, it takes some of the burden off of the air traffic control people who are watching their radar screens, and it enables them to focus their attention instead on a broader area or different areas that might be more tenuous. If you don't report seeing the other plane, then they're going to keep an eye on you on that part of the screen. Makes sense, right? Well, not everyone in the room that day thought so. One former airlines pilot, in fact, declared that he would never report sighting another aircraft because if he did and something happened, he could be held liable. The rest of the pilots in the room were shocked by this man's attitude. You could feel the revulsion at such a selfish attitude, the callousness. There are such people everywhere, of course, obtuse, ungenerous, shut down. While it is never pleasant to discover them among us, it is gratifying that they are rejected by the majority almost instinctively. And that's Seat Notes and a Flying Lesson for August the 9th. I want to thank Daniel Wetzel, Dan Wetzel, Yahoo Sports national columnist, for his comments on the Vic case. Dan Schaefer for his views on Barry Bonds, and Nicholas Aratakis, whose book, No More Ramen, 20-something Survival Guide, would be useful for many parents who are having children grow up. Get them out of the house eventually. Tomorrow, Lance Miller, The Way to Happiness Foundation, and Stephen Pizzo, newsforreal.com. Thank you for being with us today on America Back on Track. I'm Tony Seaton.
Hey, what's he doing?
What?
That guy is changing his oil in the street and letting it run right in the storm drain, which pollutes the bay. I totally wouldn't surf in that.
Dude, what can we do?
Call 1-800-CLEANUP to report anyone dumping oil, antifreeze, or paint in the street.
This way, fools like that can be fined.
Tell everyone to call 1-800-CLEANUP.
Taking care of the marine sanctuary is your duty. From Mayos at Monterey High.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to 1 million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Looking to find the best in the USA? Come to Boulevards.com. We're the best address in city guides across the U.S. For the best information in travel, Boulevards.com gives you the most up-to-date choices for the best in dining, hotels, entertainment, adventure, and exciting tips to make your holiday the best it can be. Whether you're a local or just looking for great getaway tips, go to Boulevards.com and get the best. Be independent of search engines. Make your choices. We're Boulevards.com. Come visit us at SanFrancisco.com, SanJose.com, Carmel.com, WashingtonDC.com, PaloAlto.com, Seattle.com, Oakland.com, SanAntonio.com, Denver.com, and many more. We are Boulevards.com, the best in your visiting the USA. Come visit us at Boulevards.com.
You're listening to KRML, 1410 AM, Carmel, California. The news from the Quality News Network is next.
This is the Quality News Network. The Dow Jones is down more than 340 points in trading today. We'll have the latest numbers from Wall Street just before today's close coming up in our business block. President Bush held a press conference today before leaving for vacation. He dismissed the idea of raising the federal gasoline tax to bring in money to repair bridges after last week's disaster in Minnesota. The New York Times reports that investigators may have discovered a design flaw in the Minneapolis I-35 West Bridge that collapsed last week. It involves steel girders used to connect the steel parts of the structure. There was extra weight on the bridge from construction crews doing resurfacing work at the time of the collapse. Also today in Minneapolis, searchers found the bodies of the 6th and 7th victims of last week's collapse. 5 bodies were recovered earlier. There still may be 6 people missing. In Utah, rescue crews are drilling closer to the 6 coal miners who have been...
You're listening to The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. Analysts expect another black day on Wall Street. The failing subprime market and worldwide credit crisis is battering stocks globally. Thursday, Wall Street stocks posted their biggest one-day decline since February. The Dow closed down 387 points. For the first time since 9/11, the world's leading banks and reserves are pumping money, billions of dollars, into markets, trying to avoid a worldwide crash. Hope is dimming at Utah's Crandall Canyon coal mine. This morning, rescuers punched a hole through to the place six miners have been trapped for 4 days. The microphone threaded through the hole was greeted by silence. North Korea today demanded the U.S. call off joint military exercises with South Korea later this month. Pyongyang warned failure to do so would jeopardize historic peace talks between the two Koreas scheduled for around the same time. In Afghanistan, the Taliban today promised not to execute any of the 21 South Korean hostages, at least until face-to-face negotiations are held with South Korean officials. Finding a location both sides feel safe in is the main obstacle to proposed talks. The UN Security Council today will debate a U.S.-sponsored resolution seeking to expand the international organization's role in Iraq. The UN will be asked to increase its involvement in attempts to reconcile battling factions within the region. Charges have been dropped against 2 of 8 Marines accused of murdering 24 unarmed men, women, and children in Haditha 2 years ago. Charges were already abandoned against one of the defendants in exchange for his testimony in the case. Triple-digit temperatures set new records yesterday throughout Georgia and the Carolinas. Forecasters expect the heat wave to continue throughout the South and Midwest until next week. From Ohio through Pennsylvania, tens of thousands are without power today following a storm system that swept throughout the region. Heavy rains and tornadoes are flooding streets and neighborhoods. At least one person has been killed. In French Polynesia, a passenger airline crashed yesterday afternoon, killing all 20 aboard. The plane was carrying tourists and locals to Tahiti when it plunged into the sea. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
If you're a news junkie, there's a book you must read called Don't Mess with the Press, How to Write, Report, and Produce Quality Television News. Don't Mess with the Press is a textbook for journalism students and a handbook for people already in the business. While written primarily as an instructional guide, Don't Mess with the Press is also useful for people who follow the news closely, who want to understand how news decisions are made by quality reporters to ensure they get the best news coverage possible. Don't Mess with the Press was written by Tony Seaton, founder and executive producer of the Quality News Network. Tony began his broadcast journalism career in his teens, eventually covering Watergate, 6 elections, 5 space shots, and a wide range of general news. He also produced Barbara Walters' news interviews for ABC. Ordering information for Don't Mess with the Press can be found at qualitynewsnetwork.com. Visit our website and click on the Don't Mess with the Press link.
China's trade surplus jumped 67% in July, the second highest increase ever recorded. Beijing's announcement comes as Congress is increasing its pressure over trade disputes and a rash of contaminated Chinese goods have flooded U.S. markets. Despite difficulties in the housing industry, consumer confidence in August has risen to a 5-month high. The world's largest financial services company and one of the world's largest mortgage lenders, American International Group, AIG, warned investors yesterday that mortgage defaults are now spreading to borrowers one level above subprime customers. Countrywide, the largest U.S. mortgage lender announced it was holding $800 million in subprime loans, and 20% of those loan holders have missed at least one payment. Following a stock market plunge due to U.S. subprime troubles, Japan's central bank today injected nearly $8.5 billion into money markets. Japan was following the lead of the Federal Reserve, the European Central Bank, and the Australia Federal Bank, which yesterday pumped billions into the financial system to shore up credit markets. Light sweet crude is trading at $70.29 a barrel. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow is down 108 points, the Nasdaq down 24, the S&P 500 down 13. There's more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
You're listening to The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network. Welcome to Dialogue. To Conversation. To a place where the experts wear working clothes. Where history matters. Where the past makes our present and we make the future. Welcome to the Dr. Bill O'Brien Show. Here's Dr. Bill O'Brien.
Good afternoon. This is Bill O'Brien. We're at 6 minutes after the hour. If you're in the eastern part of the United States, it's 6 minutes after 3 p.m. On a Friday afternoon, it's the 27th day of April as we move towards the end of yet another month. If you count these and how fast they go, it's a little bit scary sometimes. And I think there's something to the adage that when you're young, it seems like things will never get here. And as you get older, they come so fast that you become a little bit frightened by it. And I think that's kind of where we might be. It's a pleasure to be with you today on this Friday afternoon. Again, it's the 27th day of April. I welcome you to the program. We're broadcasting here from West Virginia. We've got an improving weather day here. We had quite a bit of rain overnight and through this morning. But it's beginning to clear now, and the sun's trying to break through. And it's about the time we come on the air, the sun begins to break through. I don't know if you're into omens or whatever. Maybe that's a good one. We invite you to participate actively in our program. We really do on all of our programs on the Head On Radio Network. The issue is dialogue, and we would love to hear from you. So, again, our call-in line number is toll-free. 877-443-2366 is the number. Again, it's 877-443-2366. There are a number of issues that I think warrant at least a mention today, and I advise you to please keep the call line handy, and if there's an issue that really strikes your fancy, by all means, let us hear from you. And if there's an issue that you have that I don't mention, by all means, don't let that stop you. We want to give you an opportunity to air your concerns about particular issues or your thoughts or your ideas or questions or criticisms or whatever they might be. We want to give you a chance because we want to give you access to our audience. We want to give people an opportunity to hear what you've got to say, think about it, and in the most positive response possible to react to what you're saying in a very, very positive, constructive way. That's the way we all learn. That's what this is about. And I would suggest to you that's what's becoming more and more difficult to find in today's world. And I think all of us would agree. Last week or so, when we were talking primarily about the Virginia Tech situation, we were talking about the coarse nature of dialogue and the coarse nature of political dialogue specifically in our society. I heard this morning, talk show concerns going back to the Imus situation and suggesting that some conservatives at that time, which was about 3 weeks ago, predicted that the termination of Imus was just the beginning of a process and that this was the opening of Pandora's box, so to speak, and that more and more pressure groups, different ethnic groups, religious groups or whatever, would begin to put pressure on radio stations and talk show programs in various places to silence this one, fire that one, or whatever. And, of course, the issue that they raise is the issue of free speech. There's no question that the Imus situation does indeed raise that issue, but I would suggest to you that this paranoia of conservative talk radio, I think, is very, is somewhat understandable, and we need to put it in its own context, more or less. But, you know, again, I think that the issue of dialogue is very important. I think there's no question that in terms of the lack of civility in conversation, especially political conversation, that exists in our society today, I think we can attribute an awful lot of that, I believe, to the growth of talk radio, the vitriol, the very hostile, aggressive, coarse, insensitive way that people talk about other people and to other people. It seems to me not good. It's not good for our political system. It's not good for our ability to work together. And I think as we look at our society, no matter where we look, in politics, in Congress, at the state level, in our conversation, in our voting, or whatever, it's very obvious that a major concern that we all have in our society today is that fewer and fewer folks seem to be able to get over the issues that divide them and come and find ways to work together and to cooperate. And I believe the way we conduct our conversation and the way we treat each other has real significance there. And so again, going back to my request for you to pick up the phone and call our call-in line number, which is toll-free. Again, it's 877-443-2366. What I want to do is assure you that what we're after is your point of view. We don't, in no way do we have a point of view that we want to try to impose on you or try to shoot down your ideas or questions or whatever. If you want that, you got to go somewhere else, because I can't do that. My mother didn't raise me that way, I guess is what I would say. And so I'm very, very interested, because I know that what I learn in many, many cases, in most cases, comes from what, you know, from how you react to some of the things that I say. In my years in the classroom, I mean, that's what I always banked on, that if I can say the kinds of things that provoke response, then that's my opportunity to learn. And I feel the same way here. So with that introduction, let's touch on a few things. There's one piece, one thing that I wanted to open with today, primarily because it relates directly to what we were talking about on Monday, which dealt with the issue. If you remember, we had a conversation about the Virginia Tech situation. We were talking to Suzanne, I believe it was. My memory doesn't fail me. It was Suzanne. And we were talking about, she was talking specifically about a young person in her life that she knew that needed some help and how difficult it was to intervene. And we were talking about some of the things that make it difficult for institutions like Virginia Tech, for example, to have intervened with the young man through the years, who was obviously, you know, running up all sorts of flags about a problem, but it becomes so difficult. One of the issues I raised was the issue of liability, and we were talking about the fact that we've, you know, in many ways we've constrained ourselves in our legal system with our, you know, with our litigation system. We've constrained ourselves in so many ways from intervening in a situation like this until after something has happened. I know that in terms of abuse cases, of domestic abuse cases, we hear so often about the fact that the police were called time and time again into a particular situation, but that they couldn't act until something happened. And, of course, by the time something happens, it's many, many times too late. There was an article in the Los Angeles Times that very evening. I think we were on Monday, and this was published on the 19th, which was Monday. There was an article by Tamar Lewin, just that, about the extent to which our legal system, our laws, limit options when we're dealing with a student who's mentally ill. It talks about particular legislation that seems to make it difficult to intervene. Universities, he says, cannot tell parents about their children's problems without the student's consent. I know that, for example. We have to get approval to even send grades to students. And so basically the argument is, if a student reaches a certain age, then there's a privacy issue here. And you can't tell parents. We have parents all the time calling, wanting to know the progress, how their youngster, their daughter or son is doing. And we can't really tell them if the student is of age. So So that's just one example. You can't release information about a student's medical record without consent. You can't put students on involuntary medical leave just because they develop a serious mental illness. Just knowing that something's wrong because of a way a student behaves and what action you need to take, it's very, very difficult to do that. Dr. Richard Kadison, who's chief of mental health services at Harvard, makes the following statement on this, and he says, and I'm quoting here, "They can't really kick someone out because they're writing papers about weird topics, even if they seem withdrawn and hostile," he said. "Most state laws are pretty clear. You can only bring students to hospitals if there's an imminent risk to themselves or someone else. So universities are in a bit of a bind that way." He said also that some schools do mandate limited amounts of treatment in certain circumstances. But basically, our legal system and the laws that we've passed make it very, very difficult. And I think we all need to consider this, especially if we are inclined to be overly critical of, you know, why didn't Virginia Tech take action? Why didn't they do something sooner? Why didn't somebody raise a flag? Why didn't they pull this kid out of class? Why didn't they do such and such? It's very, very difficult to do that. I mean, I've heard so many people talk in department stores and grocery stores, for example, watching a parent with a child and the fact that they seem to be overly abusive to the child, and people think about whether they should say something, and they don't know whether to do that or not. We've reached this point in our society where we really don't know what our limits are. And I think this article speaks to that, specifically in terms of the mental illness at the university level. And since it tied so directly to what we were talking about on Monday, I thought I'd open the program with that today, and then we can put that aside, unless you would like to make a comment about it. We're at 17 minutes after the hour. Let's pause and take our first break on this Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bill O'Brien, and after a message or two, we'll be right back. Please stay with us.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Doofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
It must have been prayer meeting with Reverend Brother Bob.
See, hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
You absolutely know that you cannot mention Robert Sunday without conjuring me. This is a known fact.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. Well, sometimes I do it on purpose.
You know, the thing that kills me, you know, God just continues to punk Robert Sunday. After time, after time. And it goes back for years, you know. Let's talk a minute about his business venture. From 91 to 94, he was involved in something called Calo Vita, and it was a multi-level marketing company that breeds that pyramid scheme.
Yeah, like Amway.
Sold beauty products and healthcare products. Oh, they had a product called Sea of Galilee Mud Mask.
No, they did not.
Oh, yes, thank you.
You no.
Bob, as a heart attack, I'm serious.
Sea of Galilee Mud Mask?
Oh, yes, it was part of the product line.
Prayer meeting edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid, Wednesday nights, 6 to 9 p.m. here on the Head On Radio Network.
Ready? Not. Ready? Not.
Your body's been ready for quite some time.
Not.
Ready? But not your mind.
Ready?
Not.
Ready?
No way. You have lots to do before you have a baby. But don't forget to take folic acid today and every day to prevent birth defects one special day. So when all of you is ready, that baby of yours will be ready to take on the world.
Ready?
Not. Ready.
Back to Dr. Bill, your passport to perspective on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bill O'Brien. We're at 21 minutes after the hour, 21 minutes after 3 in the East. We welcome you to today's program. If you're just joining us, if you've been with us since the top of the hour, we thank you for staying with us. Let me give you our call-in line number again, and it's toll-free. We do encourage you to take advantage of it, make use of it. Our call-in line number is 877-443-2366. That's 877-443-2366. If you are just joining us, we opened with an article from the Los Angeles Times, I believe, on Monday, dealing with the topic that we were talking about on Monday, which was the Virginia Tech situation and the questions about why the system, we'll use that term for convenience, didn't intervene sooner in the shooter at Virginia Tech, and going all the way back to his grade school years, and there seemed to be all sorts of flags and opportunities for intervention. And the article in the Times, op-ed piece in the Times, pointed out that our legal system has become cumbersome in this area. And we're talking about the issue of individual rights and privacy rights and all of these other things, and it is very difficult. And there are specific pieces of legislation, not only at the national level, but in each state as well, which govern procedures dealing with student life on campus, if you will, whether it's their grades, the rights of the parents to know, the parents pay the bills, but yet at the same time there are privacy restrictions to access to their grades and various other things. I know here at Concord in West Virginia, we have a very large, relatively large for the size of the campus, resident population. We have about 1,200 students out of a student body of about 3,000. So more than a third of our students are resident students. And we still have a procedure at midterm where we send home grades of students in trouble. But now we have to abide by all sorts of privacy limitations, et cetera. Parents get really irritated, especially if they're paying the bills. They want to know basically how their son or daughter is doing, and in many cases, without written permission, we can't tell them. So I think this is an issue for all of us. We have a caller on our line. We're at 23 minutes after the hour, and we have Dave from California. Hi, Dave.
Dr. Bill, it's been a while. I listen most all the time, and I very much appreciate and enjoy your show.
Well, thank you. It's really fun to hear from you, Dave. How are you today?
Oh, not bad at all. It's a beautiful day here in Eureka, California.
Great.
Coming there too, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty nice. We're in for a pretty good stretch of weather here for the next 3 or 4 days, it looks like.
Well, the thought that I would want to share with you today, if I might, is that I think an awful lot is interconnected of why things are going crazy like they are. And it's part of the fact that we're living in a time where our country is involved in illegal wars, where bees, we now hear, are dying off. The environment is under threat. The treasury is near bankrupt. Our country has fallen into the hands of what I consider just outrageous criminals. And it's a time growing up that I would think crime is going to escalate. I'd have to fear that if we don't somehow bring it to an end and reverse what is going on, immense harm in many ways is going to be coming down on us. That's my
mm-hmm. Well, it's a pretty dreary scenario, but I can't argue with you on most of your points. I think you're right. You're right. The issue of the illegal war I find particularly interesting. One of the things that I had on my agenda today was the preliminary writings and excerpts from the new book by George Tenet about the decisions surrounding the war in Iraq and the blame game and picking on somebody to be the fall guy and all of this stuff it suggests, I mean, when this guy who was head of the CIA was right on the inner sanctum, if you will, of the whole operation, and says basically that there was no discussion ahead of time about the pros and cons of the strategy. There was no thinking beyond the actual invasion itself. You begin to get very, very distressed. It's reinforcing things that we already know, but at the same time, it's painful.
Well, you know, we don't live in a milieu that is what stability, caring, decency, the standards being set for us as we perceive them accurately is pretty bad. And I think there's kind of an overwhelming feeling of what can I do? How can I change it? You know? I've been spending some time trying to analyze as best I can what is in the heart of today's neocons. Why they are as they are. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of people that really want to believe that their country is a wonderful place and that we bring good things to the world. We're on the white horse bringing peace and freedom and setting a good example. People want to believe that. I want to believe that. I'm sure you do too, but
yep.
Look at reality. And some people don't want to do that. They choose to turn on the station that will tell them the lies that they want to hear, and they are certainly out there. If you want to tune into Fox, and if you want to tune into Limbaugh and Hannity and such, they will tell you what a wonderful country it is and what a wonderful government we have, and the traitorous people that speak ill of them. But there's another element I know. There is people who in their heart say, I am what's in it for me, and I don't care about anybody else. I don't care about you people. If you're suffering, if you have no health care, if you're living under a bridge and trying to collect aluminum cans, tough. I want more for me. There is that person. And I think they're having quite a pervasive influence right now. There's more, I'm sure, but that's...
Yeah, but, Dave, you know, one of the points you just made that I think is telling... is the fact that, you know, the people tune in to hear what a great country we are and great things we do for mankind and all the rest of it. And the fact of the matter is what that says, and I think you'd agree with this. I'm not saying anything contradicts what you said, but I think what that tells us is that people want that kind of a country. In other words, the thing that always has kept me afloat in this whole thing, if you will, is that this is the nation, perhaps more than any other nation, that not only has the will to be like that, but also has the resources to be able to do that. And if we can just get the right people steering the ship, as it were, we could indeed make this a reality, I believe.
Yeah.
And I think that's what progressives are about. I think they really believe we may never attain the perfect society, but darn it, we always ought to be pursuing policies and programs that take us in that direction rather than in the opposite direction.
You know, I hear some wonderfully intelligent people offering what I have come to regard as a real oversimplification, that the Republicans, for the most part, believe that people are exploitive, we are what's in it for me, we are out to take advantage of one another and get what we can for ourselves. That the progressives tend to believe that people are basically noble, that they are honorable and will do the right thing if left to their own devices. And, of course, both are true and both are false. There are some very decent, wonderful, caring people who try and will work to do the best they can for people in general.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are those who will try every way to take advantage, and anticipating that everybody is like them, that it's a rat race, and the biggest rat's going to get the cheese. That how do we, you know, when you put people that are exploitive, manipulative, dishonest, confrontive, abrasive, greedy, up against people that are mellow and decent and considerate and thoughtful, who do you put your money on?
Oh yeah, all the time. It's a gimme. You know, well, as George Tenet says, it's a slam dunk.
Well,
you're exactly,
you know,
right.
You meet people. You have a lot of it in you, but you know, a guy James, as decent, as intelligent, as honorable, if you put a goon in his face, they will soon wish they hadn't done that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Democrats are learning more and more that we have to be able to draw lines and stand. You know, even members of our Congress are acting like maybe we should really be out there doing something, even if they're going to call us all kinds of hateful names.
Yeah. You know, I heard today, speaking of that, when talking about the Democrats, I heard earlier today a comment on the passing of this legislation that the president has threatened over and over again to veto and probably will. And his point was the House debated for a long time and passed this bill, and then the Senate debated and passed a similar bill, and then they're going to come together and create a work out the kinks and present the same bill to the president, and he's going to veto it. Of course he's going to veto it. He's promised over and over again that he's going to veto it. And the bottom line is they don't have the votes to override the veto. So what was the purpose of the whole process in the first place? And his argument is they could have better spent their time concentrating and discussing things that matter rather than wasting their time passing legislation that the president tells them he's going to veto and that they can't do anything about. And I thought that was a very interesting scenario. You know, a very interesting statement based on what you said about Democrats. Some Democrats are beginning to feel that we really need to get out there and do some things, and rather than just pass resolutions and do what they usually have done.
You know, one thing makes me think that Bush isn't going to veto that measure is that he's never been honest about anything that I can recall, and if he's saying he's going to veto it, then he probably isn't.
Yeah, yeah. If he doesn't, he'd be consistent anyway. You know, unbelievable, Dave. But I agree with you that I think the difference between liberals and conservatives or Republicans and Democrats, and I'm not too sure that the differences between Republicans and Democrats are exactly similar to the differences between conservatives and progressives, but. But, you know, at the same time, I think that this idea about human nature and whether, in fact, you know, there's no question. I spent a lot of time with the founders and studying the founders. And there's no question that they believe, and the Constitution clearly indicates, that they believe that man's nature was such that he couldn't do what he ought to do unless he was forced to do it. That given a situation where he was really free, man would always choose evil over good. And that view of mankind in reality explains the Constitution. Madison, one of the Federalist Papers, said if men were angels, we wouldn't need governments at all. And the argument is the reason we need laws and all this is because man will not do what he's supposed to do unless he's either forced to or he's bribed. And so what you do is you create a system that rewards certain kinds of behavior and punishes other kinds of behavior. And the fact of the matter is, if you grow up in that system and that becomes your world, so to speak, then in reality it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. People begin to behave as their environment dictates that they should behave.
Well,
you know,
it's been such
it's
a
scary.
Fortunate country that we did have at the time a Ben Franklin and a James Madison, a Thomas Jefferson, a George Washington. We had some people that genuinely were acting to try to say what will be in the best interest of the people. Can we design for them a government which will allow them to live in comfort and to meet their needs? And that was renewed again by both Roosevelt and Truman. And we've been fortunate at times that decent people who have the best interest of the people at heart were in power. And
mm-hmm.
I don't think they're there now, not by any stretch, and I think that they're there because they planned it out. They set up their little PNAC plan, and it was a very ambitious one. We are going to steal the government. We're going to invade the Middle East. We are going to do whatever it takes to get as much for us as we possibly can, and we don't give a damn who we hurt in the process. And I think they planned it out at Downing Street. They planned it out. The criminals of the worst possible order, I believe, have gained control of our country, and they did it by fraud. And
right.
They'll be able to address it. I trust you saw the debate last night.
Yes, I did. I watched most of it, yes.
Boy, I was so impressed with the Kucinich and the Gravel. They were dealing with reality.
Gravel was awesome. Yeah, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And in fact, I thought Kucinich was good as well. I really did. But and I thought that, you know, I everybody talks about winners and losers. The purpose of that wasn't to find winners and losers. I don't believe. I thought that was very one of the better ones I've seen.
I thought it was too. I mean, they were all articulate and intelligent and skillful and whatnot. But I think the message that came through from Kucinich says this country needs that man as our president.
Right. When he held up the Constitution, and I mean, basically that's the impeachment issue.
Understand.
When he held up that Constitution, yeah.
Right, and he said, understand, you have one person, one candidate running for president who will hold these criminals accountable for what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And nobody would raise their hand when asked who would support that.
Yeah.
I was surprised that Mike Gravel didn't, but of course he's no longer got a vote on anything, so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Dave, thank you, and I hope that you have a wonderful weekend, and it's been a pleasure to speak with you today. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, sir.
Okay, thank you, Dave. Bye now. We're at 6 minutes after the hour. Let's take this opportunity to have our bottom of the hour break. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network. This is Bill O'Brien. We'll be right back after a message or two. Please stay with us.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Hobbled by court rulings that let Northwest Airlines throw out union contracts and prevent the union from striking, the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, has reached a tentative agreement with Northwest, giving the airline the huge concessions it was after. AFA-CWA's Master Executive Council Vice President, Andy Wisbacher.
A deal that represents $195 million in concessions to the company. We were able to get some movement on some non-economic items. I understand some scheduling issues and things like that, but as far as the economic items, there wasn't any change on that.
Northwest flight attendants have twice rejected agreements that included the $195 million in concessions. That represents nearly a 40% cut in wages and benefits. Wisbacher says he has no sense of how they'll vote this time. And he says the U.S. legal system and the National Mediation Board have both failed to protect the interests of workers in this case.
The American worker has been failed not only by the bankruptcy court, but by the National Mediation Board, which has refused to release us into a cooling-off period so that we could use the leverage of the right to strike at the bargaining table.
The issue of network neutrality is back in the spotlight today as forces gather to push Congress to pass legislation that would make preserving Internet freedom law. Jesse Russell reports.
More than 16 months ago, when the telecommunication companies began pushing legislation that would split the Internet into two tiers and give them greater control over what Internet users see and do online, there was barely a sound. But then, a groundswell of supporters rose up, uniting the unlikely cast of organizations such as the NRA, Christian Coalition, MoveOn.org, and more. The millions of supporters put pressure on their congresspeople and helped educate them on the importance of network neutrality. That led to the death of the telecommunication company's legislation on the floor of Congress. In order to protect the future of network neutrality, Senators Byron Dorgan, a Democrat, and Olympia Snow, a Republican, have drafted the Internet Preservation Act. According to small business owner Gary Markle, who operates nmchili.com, preserving network neutrality is important for his livelihood.
Tier pricing with regard to Internet usage. Now, that scared the bejesus out of me. My entire income is predicated on being seen on the web.
The Christian Coalition is once again stepping up, making the issue of network neutrality number two on their legislative agenda this year. The Coalition's Director of Communications, Michelle Combs, said the coalition plans to make sure that network neutrality is on the radar and talked about by the presidential candidates.
Net neutrality is a true family issue. We believe that it will affect millions of families around the country and millions of families that are involved with our organization.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Join the conversation. Call Dr. Bill now at 877-443-2366. Now, Dr. Bill O'Brien.
We are at 41 minutes after the hour. This is Bill O'Brien, and we welcome you to our program if you're just joining us. And if you've been with us since the top of the hour, we thank you for staying with us. We just got off the phone with Dave, and from California, we were talking about a couple of things, the nature of the administration and the differences between the neocon vision of the role of America in the world and the progressive view of the role of America in the world. I think that sums up pretty well. One major issue that Dave was talking about, he was also talking about the Democratic debate from South Carolina last evening, which was run on MSNBC, and we were talking about the performance of Dennis Kucinich and former Senator Gravel of Alaska, and it was interesting with eight of them. I thought that the questions, the moderator Brian Williams of NBC did a good job. He kept it moving. The questions were targeted to specific individuals. He asked some very, very pointed questions that could only be asked to certain individuals. I'm thinking of the one to Joe Biden about his tendency to be windy in his speeches and in his answers, and asked if as president he could minimize the conversation and get right to the point. His response was one word, yes, which got a laugh, and Gravel more than once brought the audience to its feet. So it was a pretty informative and pretty fast moving discussion. I'm obviously struck. It's hard to when Dave calls and hangs up, and he's left you with this, issue, about the administration, about the behavior of the administration, and what the state of the nation really is. And of course, all I'm thinking about as he's talking is the fact that this week the Dow Jones average broke 13,000, and what that is causing certain people, the very people that concern Dave the most, to do is point to the thing and say, isn't that symbolic of the fact that the economy is strong and that the nation is doing well and that there are jobs and that the doomsday scenario that we hear about the war and we're mired in the war and we're going to have to leave with our tail between our legs and all these other things, and what they're focusing on is the Dow. I heard an interesting commentary on that today, by the way, and I think it's pretty poignant. It's pretty I think it's pretty informative. And he was talking about the fact that, liberals and progressives and critics of the administration tend to bypass or to downplay the fact that that the Dow hit the 13,000 mark this week. And he was arguing that, on the contrary, that's very significant. Then they said something that was particularly important. And he said, you know, the reason that the Dow hitting this 13,000 plateau is significant is because it positively affects so many people. And he said, whether you know it or not, more than 50% of the population in this country, more than 50% of us, have a direct financial interest in the performance of the stock market. And his example, which was a very poor example, I was in the car, though, and other than stop and do something drastic, it's a little bit hard to protest when you're behind the wheel. But his example was, he said, for example, if you have a savings account, and I hope you do, the ability of the banks to pay you interest on your savings account is a direct result of the performance of the stock market and the Dow. And, of course, all I could think of is, yeah, and what is the percentage of interest that you get on your what is the percent of interest that you get on your savings account? It's less than 1% on a traditional passbook savings account, when, in fact, the Dow is setting records. So, obviously, what that says is, so while 50% of us are directly involved and have a direct stake in what happens on the market, the fact of the matter is most of the money being made is being made by the banks, not by you as a depositor. But there's no opportunity to say that. But I think the significance of what Dave is talking about is extremely important. Mentioned in the conversation with Dave, and I guess it's a good time as any to return to this for a little bit of time that we have left. We mentioned in the course of conversation the fact that George Tenet's book is getting a lot of attention. There's a Scott Pelley interview that's going to be aired on Sunday evening on 60 Minutes with George Tenet. The title of his book is At the Center of the Storm. It's a 549-page book on his tenure as head of the CIA. And, of course, it gets into much of the decision-making and conversation surrounding the decision to go to Iraq and a number of other things. And the New York Times is running key excerpts from the book. They pointed out that a copy of the book was purchased at retail in advance of publication by a reporter for the New York Times, and so therefore they're able to get a jump on everybody else in printing a couple of key quotes. And I wanted to maybe share them with you, because I think they're very significant. The one that strikes me is the first one. First of all, according to the accounts of the book, Tenet is very, very soft, very easy on George Bush, on President Bush. He's much harder and much more severe, much more caustic, if you will, in his treatment of Dick Cheney and some of the others in the administration. He specifically cites Paul Wolfowitz and Douglas Feith, the so-called neocons in the White House, for what happened in relationship to Iraq. But he's much more supportive of President Bush, than he is Vice President Cheney. But let me share one quote with you, and we'll take our last break in this hour, and then we'll kind of take it on home to the top of the hour. We have one more hour to go. A key statement, this is out of the New York Times coverage of the account this morning. He says the following. This is a quote from George Tenet's book. There was never a serious debate that I know of within the administration about the imminence of the Iraqi threat, he says. Nor, he says, was there ever a significant discussion about the possibility of containing Iraq without an invasion. Now, the reason I mention this is, but first of all, it's obviously extremely informative, but it's more than that to me. I would suggest to you that, you know, and I know that I'm preaching to the choir in many cases, but I think it's very significant. Many of us have known for a long time that the administration was making the invasion of Iraq its first option rather than its last option. Most of the people who were critical of the war from the very beginning were making that point, that war ought always to be a nation's last option rather than its first option, and that in this particular situation, all the evidence was suggesting that that was indeed not true. This is confirmed by George Tenet in this quote, that there was never a serious discussion, a significant discussion, about the possibility of containing Iraq without invading it. And I think that is very, very significant, because that language itself suggests to me that the administration not only has lied in its explanation about the entry into war, but in fact it lied about the issue of war being its last option rather than its first option. In other words, the implication that the administration obviously made is that war was the only option left, that the only way to contain Iraq, given the threats which intelligence was suggesting were there, that we really had no option. Now, Tenet is confirming what Richard Clark...
This is the Quality News Network. Analysts expect another dark day on Wall Street. The failing subprime market and worldwide credit crisis is battering stocks globally. Thursday, Wall Street stocks posted their biggest one-day decline since February. The Dow closed down 387 points. Hope is dimming at Utah's Crandall Canyon coal mine. This morning, rescuers punched a hole through to the place six miners have been trapped for 4 days. The microphone threaded through the hole was greeted by silence. In Minneapolis, divers have recovered three more bodies from the wreckage of the highway bridge that collapsed last week into the Mississippi River. A U.S. helicopter was brought down in a small Sunni village south of Baghdad today. Two U.S. soldiers were injured. Security remains tight in northern Baghdad for a pilgrimage expected to attract as many as 1 million Shia. Travel bans and curfews remain in place. 2,000 Iraqi police are on patrol. The UN Security Council today will debate a U.S.-sponsored resolution seeking to expand the international organization's role in Iraq. The UN will be asked to increase its involvement in attempts to reconcile battling factions within the region. Charges have been dropped against 2 of 8 Marines accused of murdering 24 unarmed men, women, and children in Haditha 2 years ago. Charges were already abandoned against one of the defendants in exchange for his testimony in the case. In Miami, the judge in the terror trial of Jose Padilla and 2 co-defendants has ruled the jury may not consider whether the men's actions are defensible under Islamic law. Closing arguments in the case begin Monday. Triple-digit temperatures set new records yesterday throughout Georgia and the Carolinas. Forecasters expect the heat wave to continue throughout the South and Midwest until next week. From Ohio through Pennsylvania, tens of thousands are without power today.